Yes. Yes, it's full of discombob. We are gathering to recombobulate. Everything is a quirky, interesting day full of high contrasts. There we go. All right, we're gathering. Nothing can stop us now. There we go. All righty. So it is a trippy, quirky day, and the world, is full of, micro and macro forms of tyranny and grace. And the world is full of goat getters, right? We go, those people sure are goat getters. So we begin by calling in our cows, our goats, our Mars, everything. Here we go. Ah, there we are. We've called in our goats. This is again participatory metaphor week. There we go. We've called in our goats and our cows and our animals to recombobulate in this quirky time. Yes, and then it was just very exciting to have my internet go out just now. And thank you all for your it's good. It's good. Oh, no. Yes, never mind this. We're all playing together here. Okay, that's good. Because the world is full of the following word we want to add to our vocabulary. All right, so there we go. I think there we go. The word is obstreperous, right? Obstreperous is such a good word to add to our vocabulary because it's rampant, and it comes from Judge Engoron, may he be protected by a pewter shield, convening over the New York fraud case in the Trumpian thing, and he called the conduct of the defendants obstreperous. And as Jack says, I can't help but think the judge was having a little fun with that word, knowing full well that Donald Trump had no idea what the hell it means. But here's what it means. It's really useful, right? unruly, unmanageable, disorderly, undisciplined, uncontrollable, unrestrained, rowdy, disruptive, truculent, difficult, refractory, rebellious, mutinous, out of hand, riotous, out of control, wild, turbulent, uproarious, and all those things. Vociferous. There we go. So, yes, because I don't know about your day, but not in a way that personally affects me, but members of my family, sort of nephews and things are just completely. So it reminds us the micro and the macro, whatever is anywhere is everywhere. Tyranny, micro, which is why whatever we do in a small way is good for the whole thing. There we go. Right after our session, I go, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to vacuum fish poop out of the fish tank as a sacred Virgo magic thing for the world. We're just hoovering fish poop from the giant Placo out of the thing and then putting it to fertilize the plants. It's very satisfying. I'll be up there after the session. There we go. But see, whatever we do, we just add a little thing to the thing. So I remain amused by the series What We Do in the Shadows. I don't know how many of you have seen it, but it introduces part of our vocabulary that is so useful. It's a satire parody about vampires. Pretty great. Not consistently always, but they introduce the essential concept of the energy vampire, Colin Robinson, right? And the energy vampire is such a useful reality and metaphor to understand what's going on. Sucks chi out of conflict, right? And as I mentioned, I think a week or two ago, one of his witty things is he says, and you know, if I'm ever really low, you know, I go on the internet, and he goes, it's amazing how within minutes you can have hundreds of strangers furious with you. And I just feed on that. I just feed on that. And in the latest episode that I watched, he finds an old girlfriend who is an emotional energy vampire. And he so admires her. It's like, oh, I've suffered so much. And he goes, oh, she's so good at this. Like, just sucking the chi right out of it. And I find this super useful. We're going to talk about grievance and boundaries and kindness and joy and Thor's hammer and all these things to play with. And feel free to, you know, whatever. I can get rid of the obstreperous thing. But obstreperousness, you can go away. But what a good word. I just wanted obstreperous to re-enter the vocabulary because it's kind of antique, right? And again, remember, the more words, the more metaphors, the more myths, the more portals of participation. So expanding, you know, and how shall we deal with all these quirky kerfuffles in the macro and micro world? Why? Because even as my mug says, thank you, teammate, better a trickster than a martyr be. Let all kerfuffles be an incentive to experiment, whereby to access more of our skills, to expand our repertoire of skillful response. Because remember, the energy vampires, you know, they're goat-getters, right? They're goat-getters. And when we go, oh, 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 they feed on that. And my nephew is a champion goat getter, right? It's just chaos and things and the thing. And even now there's texts coming in. No. That's what happened was there were more texts coming in from chaos, black magicians and obstreperous people. And I was like, oh, and I have to plug in my phone and whatever. And I unplugged the internet, which is why we're here. There we go. Oh, perfect. Somehow, but all of it to maintain our calm dynamic. So I love the energy vampire and the emotional energy vampire. And when she works a room, Colin Robinson, the energy vampire, is so admiring. It's like, oh, she's so good, you know. And then she broke my heart. That was really brilliant. Anyway, it's a very useful thing. And we have such an interesting chart to play with and many metaphors. So I did start off going, last night at 2 a.m. I wrote this thing and then we just sent it to you a minute ago and there, that's all perfect. But it's like, okay, here we are. Session five, sacred to Venus magic, trickster, metaphoric magic, And that's the beginning of our headline. So I want to encourage us to take things from this week and practice with them, right? Writing headlines, writing witty, desirable headlines, you know, just part of our thing. So time for us to engage in profound creative whimsy, you know. And in the late night hours when I was writing this to you all, I was like, well, maybe take profound out. No, we're going to leave it profundo. It's like deep ecology in Italy is called ecologia profunda. And it's like, oh, that's great, profunda, right? So profound creative whimsy. Again, whimsy, you know, has as part of our repertoire is quite liberating, not always in the right place, but animating metaphors expands our repertoire of responses so as to be agents of cool response in a hot reactive world. So there's also, like, in the news, right? Kevin McCarthy's had a trippy day, right? And in the news, you know, and in our micro news, just see if you can just kind of track the thing. Long text threads of people here and I'm just going, all right, and let us waft calm, cool. And I'm about to convene my dream news council. We shall be wafting calm, cool, everyone self-possessed in their own calm autonomy to the team. And we support, you know, those under attack with the pewter shield of protection. There we go. So exactly. So it is the ongoing equinoctial conversing betwixt the Venusian realms of Taurus and Libra. This is such a, let me just bring up the chart for fun because it's so exciting to me, right? And then just follow along here. So, right. All right, we'll just go for this. So it is beautiful. And because we're starting a skosh past scheduled, it's a slightly different rising sign now, 7 Gemini, which is arouse strikers surround a factory. And we go, all right, okay. So our ongoing now, we have Jupiter and Uranus together, retrograde, inward, we're gestating many things. We're getting ready for many things. We're here, but also there's a longer view. They're getting closer and closer. And it is a glorious thing at night. You know, two nights ago, it was the moon and Jupiter. And it's like, oh! And once again, the dogs were like, you know, turn off your phone, you know, and come outside. And I was like, oh, you're right. Oh, moon and Jupiter. And so still, we'll see the moon and Jupiter. It's just that the moon is moving further away, sort of translating. The moon has a voice. But it's Jupiter, you know, our principle of blessing and curiosity. And just to repeat, because it's still at 14 plus Taurus, which is in the midst of a wild storm, a stranger walks into town wearing a silk top hat and carrying a large black bag, the doctor, magician, collaborator with natural forces. Yes, it bears repeating. It's Jupiter's staying there for a long time because it wants us to bring this into incarnational actuality. And, you know, with Uranus, the two biggest path openers, and they will be getting closer and closer. They're retrograde now, and they're getting closer and closer until in the spring, April 20th, 2024, they're exactly conjoined. We addressed that last week at 21 plus Taurus, white dove flying over troubled waters. And we go, right. So we're in our own immediate story. And then there's a slightly longer story and then a longer story. But I love Taurus and Libra, Mars in Libra, Sun in Libra, little asteroid Pallas Athena in Libra, soon Mercury in Libra. So this conversation, these are the two Venusian realms. Taurus is the Venus realm of sensuality and goats and plants and, you know, everything alive, the collaborative realm. And Libra is the Venusian realm of culture. We go, right, it's a great conversation that is ongoing, you know, between these two. And it's for us to experiment with our blessing, you know, to to go backstage, something we're going to start a little bit this week, and then keep it going, because I realize, you know, doing meditative processes in Zoom, people do that. But people might feel a little self-conscious. Oh, but many people just shut their video off. So we want to prime the pump that we are backstage and thinking of our goats and thinking of what we love, you know, in the natural world, the plants and animals and fungi, and also what shows up. My neighbor pointed out, look, an eagle over our houses. And we hadn't seen, there's eagles on the Potomac River, but we're just a smidge away. And it's like, oh, eagle. All right, eagle. Everything speaking to us, everything telling us its story, by in the Taurus sensual realm, by shape and color and song and rhythm. And if we just approach the world with informed, reverent curiosity, hello, what's your story? And how can we engage in reciprocal blessing? If we just do that, you know, we humans would be back in the dance, right? So that's a major part of our, whoops, just moving us around here. Sorry about that. there we go. So this is really the realm of participatory democratic animism, my favorite thing. To-ing and fro-ing with culture and negotiating across species borders in a manner of reciprocal blessing. I just said that. Also known as mutual aid. So we will wonder what auguries guide us to communicative communing, you know, what in flora, fauna, fungi realm is wanting to speak with us. Moon in Gemini. The moon has moved past its conjunction with Jupiter and Uranus in the last 2 days, and now she has a voice. We go, ah, and then our rising sign just changed, just for fun. More metaphors. The backstage gods go, give them more metaphors. So 8 Gemini rising, where I am, you know, which is a quiver of arrows, right? A quiver of arrows. And because we are tricksters, we customize this. There we go. Okay. I'm sorry to make everybody seasick, but I can't tell you. Okay. There we go. We customize our quiver of arrows. Just everybody feel a quiver of arrows. And each one tipped with compassion, with tyranny as its target. Batum. You know, let's launch a couple practice rounds. You know, if you think of any part of your life, personal or societal, where they're, you know, deserving of an arrow tipped with compassion, with tyranny as its target, just think of that, you know. And if you can't think of anything, I have some candidates, right? Just in my own personal, and you know, it isn't reactive to me. It's like, how to maintain calm, right? And then every now and then just backing off. But everybody, just to think of, you know, people are going to sleep. Okay, that's right. But just take an arrow out of the quiver. Oh, see, it's already changed rising signs. Now it's a plane doing a nosedive, which was oddly Prigozhin's sun degree. But we're back with the quiver anyway. We're holding on to these metaphors. Just take an arrow, and in one's mind's eye, I have something to, you know, pull the string back, tipped with compassion, with tyranny as its target, and let it fly. Futum. And always the default is, like, when we don't know what to do, invite in what does. It's really effective, right? And when we don't know what to do, invite in trickster. It's really effective to resolve it. And if we don't know something, you know, a target of tyranny, go, all right, and then go wherever, go, oh, arrow tipped with compassion, with tyranny as its target, go wherever you are best needed. That will do. Because part of the beauty of and complexity of now, and it's helpful for me, at least, to show you on the chart, you know, and just, again, let it wash over you. But we have a grand trine in Earth. So we have this conversation between backstage, or between democratic animism, everything's alive, flora, fauna, you know, our kin, flora, fauna, fungi, be her name. you know, and it trines 120 degree angle. Pluto, there's a lot of retrogrades now, which just means the apparent motion is backwards, which is inward. It just gives us strategic direction that the best way to resolve anything outer right now is first inward, you know, metaphorically, backstagely. Okay, so Pluto is retrograde. Re at the exact degree where it was when the United States of America was founded. So it's re. And so it is, you know, again, you can have a democracy, but only if you look at everything and go way back to find the sketchy stuff and also the good stuff. So this is a trine. You know, Jupiter, Pluto is the sorry, and it's moving slowly into cahooting there. It's the Phoenix's song. It's the story of the Phoenix. It's the story of what gets us through. And we'll get to Neptune in a moment, already spacing out. So remember the Phoenix, before she bursts into flames and reemerges from her ashes, sings this hauntingly beautiful song. Taurus is the throat, and all of creation listens and is reminded of what's really important. You know, beauty and kindness and fill in the blanks and reciprocal blessing and mutual aid and symbiosis and kindness. And then she bursts into flames, right? And is reborn. So this is saying, right, let's quicken these things. So Jupiter and Uranus trine Pluto, an abundance of regenerative energy and deep delving detective work is available. And then it trines Mercury and Virgo at one of my favorite degrees. And I think it describes many people that I can see on this Zoom call. The image for Mercury is in a cave overhung with twisted roots. A seeker pours over the glowing pages of an illuminated alchemical manuscript. You go, that's cool. So it says, we all know a lot, you know, and nature knows a lot. And it's a grand trine. The medievals were sort of gloomy about grand trines. They thought they were bad luck because they were so much talent, but they're a self-enclosed system. And so it's, will we do it? Will we? So you want to see prickly, challenging things to engage the grand trine. And we have those. Let's kind of begin this in. And so grand trine in Earth to bring things into sensual incarnational actuality. And the key to that is both Pluto and Uranus have a beautiful sextile, a creative 60-degree working relationship to Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination, metaphors. Here we go. This is the sine qua non for making everything work, and here we are, right? And then Neptune is exactly opposite Mercury. So the description is we can be spacey or unplug the internet when we're about to convene or, you know, whatever the thing is, but it's all, but that's the deeper deal. Is, you know, to wonder, to give access to how much each one of us knows, you know, in a cave overhung with twisted roots, seeker pours over the glowing pages of illuminated alchemical manuscript and says, each of us knows a lot. We go, oh, okay. And wonder. And this is very linguistic precision, guides the vision. It's like all the fairy tales say the spirits love rhyming. And they love eloquence. And speaking of eloquence, we have Jupiter quintile Saturn, again, ongoing. It's been with us for a long time. You know, it's very kind of it. It's almost precise right now. Again, irresistible eloquence and the capacity to open portals between worlds. Well, this is tricky too. You know, we all have our little micro things, just see if it resonates or not, you know. But, you know, got back from trip, couldn't find computer charger. Put on wonderful necklace that somebody had made me, that was my Mayan, my name in Mayan, not New Age Mayan, actual Mayan scholarship, on a amethyst thing. And I put it on. And it disappeared. I mean, I know it's in the house. I didn't leave the house, but it's like gone. And then I suppose I go, well, the Mayan gods are very tricky. And maybe they've gone backstage into the disappearing world to go work for our benefit. It's again how we play with the story rather than, oh no, it's like, and then we, of course, can invoke the wonderful prayer to Saint Anthony, Tony, Tony, look around, help me find what I need found. Or stay invisible, do your invisible work, protecting me and us backstage, oh Mayan gods, wherever that is. And then to delineate, that's right, our well, we have goats. Everything so far is a metaphor, but we also have Thor's hammer. Yes, that's right. Thor's hammer. And Thor's hammer, let me see if I can do it here. It's the moon, 135-degree angle to Pluto, right? Here comes the stress into the grand trine that gives us the incentive. The 135-degree angle is an awareness of danger. It's like, oh ho, ooh, everywhere. And we're tapping into, I was so moved by Janine Benyus's and my conversation that we replayed recently from 2008, but you couldn't tell. And I brought up, Wendell Berry's poem, when fear for the world grips my heart, I go and lie down with the woodrake to be with animals that do not burden themselves with forethought of grief. And I asked Janine, I go, I don't know if that's true anymore. I don't know if the woodrake and the owls have forethought of grief. And she goes, yeah. And I go, what do you think? What do you feel out there? And she goes, the whole natural world is confused and holding its breath. Like, what will the humans do? I go, right. So it behooves us, to engage all of our skills, with dedication and whimsy, with these high contrasting things. So Thor's hammer, all right, so it's the moon, 135 degree to Pluto. And again, to give voice on moon's just risen. And I'm pretty sure, right, it's a girl boldly asserts herself as this is, and we go, all right, and let's have that girl boldly asserting herself, or woman, or anything, be the earth itself. That would be good. But it's like whatever we speak to will speak back. So the moon, 135 degree angle to Pluto on one side, moon, 135 degree angle to Mars on the Mars in Libra on the other side, and a 90-degree angle between them. That's what's called a Thor's hammer. It's a very distinct thing. And my friend Sylvia taught me a long time ago. And I go, oh, and looking up on Google, Thor's hammer, more internet search is useful. But the thing I held, because we're all, filling our magic backpacks with things that resonate with us, Thor's hammer is the capacity to sweep corruption out of the halls of governance. I think we should do that now. Just Thor's hammer. Just, you have it in your bag. You have it in your bag, just in your mind's eye as well. You can pull it out at any point. But Thor's hammer again over the Capitol would be really super good. And all over all the state capitals, right? To sweep corruption out of the halls of governance by the power of Thor's hammer. Yes, thank you, half-hearted sleeping team. Okay. Right. So there's that. That's good. That's good. Up. They're rising up. And Pluto brings a cauldron and joins the grand trine in Earth from which Neptune emerges. All right, I'm just reading my notes, things I've already kind of covered here, but a little bit. But right. And then we have obstreperousness. And then let's look at the world and where we want to practice again dissolving grievance. And for this country, a wish for this country and the world, but America especially, so young, has had a very challenging time, and now it's crucial, distinguishing from the con man and the grifter and the liberating trickster. very confused, you know, whereas it's the latter that liberates us from the former. And there's a lot of great resonance. So we're going to play a clip from an amazing movie, Andy Griffith's most amazing, he's not just a goofy guy, role as Lonesome Rhodes. And it's particularly pertinent to us all now. So backstage badger roll, a face in the crowd clip.
Politics have entered a new stage, the television stage. Instead of long-winded public debates, the people want caps or slogans. Time for a change, the mess in Washington, more bang for a buck, punchlines and glamour.
Think you underestimate the respect which people
respect?
Are never...
Respect? Did you ever hear of anyone buying any product? Beer, hair rinse, tissue, because they respect it? You gotta be loved, man. Love! This whole country just like my flock of sheep. Rednecks, crackers, hillbillies, housefrows, shut-ins, pea-pickers. Everybody that's got to jump when somebody else blows the whistle. They're mine. I own them. They think like I do. Only they're even more stupid than I am, so I gotta think for them.
I say one thing for him. He's got the courage of his ignorance. I've been writing a book about... I call it Demagogue in Denim.
You have only one flaw, the way you've begun to suddenly shoot out of control. And you're beginning to antagonize the press. You're great.
Give me a whole bunch of colorful country-looking characters all sitting around, listening to Lonesome Rhodes sound off about everything from the price of popcorn to the hydrogen bomb. I'm not just an entertainer. I'm an influence, a wielder of opinion, a force. A force.
You know, boys, what really bugs me about our limey cousins is the way they keep on trying to act like a first-class outfit when their store is having to close up its branches all over the world.
That's right. Awesome.
He's getting more global every minute.
You're off.
Glad that's over. I'm gonna start shooting people instead of ducks.
Oh, if they ever heard the way that psycho really talks.
Sure, I don't like this.
You know what the public's like, a cage full of guinea pigs.
Good night, you stupid idiot. Good night, you miserable slob.
There are a lot of trained seals. I toss them a dead fish and they'll flap their flippers.
He's a monster.
I'm gonna call the station. I'll give him a piece of my mind.
Well, thanks to you, Jack.
I knew he'd open his big yap once too often and blow my fages.
Mr. Macy, I can hardly believe it's the same Lonesome Rhodes.
It is, only this time his personality finally came through.
Federal Broadcasting Network, that line is busy.
Well, you can just tell him from me that I'll never listen to his filthy program again.
Boy, it's burning up. What'd he say?
I don't know, but it must have been a whopper.
So we're slobs, are we? Well, you can tell Lonesome Rhodes for me.
I said, are we paying your network $100,000 an hour to build up our business or destroy it? But to keep this scandal from rubbing off on Biter Jacks, I mean disassociate ourselves.
All of a sudden, I'm poisoned. You're gonna love me. Say you're gonna love me. Say you're gonna love me. You're gonna love me. You're gonna love me. Hey, what's your name?
Francis.
Francis, you're gonna love me. Francis, you're gonna love me. Love me, love me. Get out. Get out. Get out, you dressed up black monkey. You turn my stomach. Get out. In a time of crisis, who else could rally the people like Lonesome Rhodes? Who else could move the people to action like Lonesome Rhodes? You are looking at America's answer to the crying need for national...
You have for. He likes lots of applause.
Beat it! Because
the people listen to Lonesome Rhodes. Because the people love Lonesome Rhodes. Lonesome Rhodes is the people. The people is Lonesome Rhodes. Beat it.
All right, so we wanted to dissolve the spell of grievance, right? That was I don't know if it's exactly prescient of Elia Kazan, the director, in 1957. A complex director, not always, you know, sometimes a tyranny guy, but this was, he really got the grifter con running on grievance. It's very resonant, right? I mean, and feel free to, you know, comment or whatever, but you know, so we want to, without hubris or expectation, dissolve in ourselves and in the world, you know, the grievance whereby the cunning man finds purchase, the Lonesome Rhodes, the faux folksy. He got it right that America would fall to the con who is faux folksy. So we want, you know, the real, the Will Rogers, the whatever, the real, the for real thing. So there's that. And I did want to bring up as an ongoing practice, dissolving grievance. You know, I got to do it with our Equinox team. We have a little clip for that because this is ongoing. And I'm, you know, again, pretty happy with my preliminary. And again, it's for everybody to work this out, going to define to Saturn what is grievance. So for me, one of my working definitions is a grievance is anything that is an impediment to blessing. Again, it can be spicy blessing, but it's like, oh, and in my, you know, family kerfuffle and in the political realm, and we're all practicing this going, right, and what would the blessing be? Because in long feuds and text threads and on internet, whatever, people are like, nah, 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 nah. And it's like, and your blessing would be? It's like, blessing? We're American. What the hell is that? And it's like, right, there we go. We want to reach for the liberating blessing, you know, the reciprocal blessing that we find, you know, in... we don't sentimentalize anything, but we do find mutual aid and ingenious receptivity. And it's why so many of us find refuge from the news and incredibly cute animal videos like, oh, look, the animal, the tiger and the bear are best friends. And that. Anyway, we have little receptors for that. It's like, the rat who's human kept knitting the rat little teddy bears, and it's like, and there's the little rat with his teddy bear. Anyway, that is we have endogenous receptors for cute accord across species borders. We really do. So the grifter runs on and the con runs on grievance. And so to dissolve it from our hearts, and I'm just increasingly aware that it's like, it's good to do it and to keep doing it, right? Because those grievances, if we could make them a renewable energy, we'd have renewable energy forever. If we can compost grievance into renewable energy, it's like an infinite supply. Well, let's do that, you know, composting grievance into energy and fuel for democracy and goodness. We have a, you know, the energy problem is solved there. So I think we have our grievance dissolving grievance excerpt. I think we do. I can't remember. The team has put this together. It's an audio or an audio visual, but whatever it is, here we go. Possibly. And Neptune does say Solve a coagula. Solve. Oh, what?
Working on it.
Oh, okay. I'll tap dance. I'll fill in.
Thank you.
So Neptune again presiding over the grand trine, presiding over these things opposite our Mercury that knows so much. Solve a coagula, dissolve and reimagine. Dissolution is the secret of the great work. Dissolving. You know, in cahoots with Pluto, we have a cauldron, a composting cauldron that's also a dissolving cauldron. And just to have this metaphor, let me remind us of the molecular reality of metaphors. You know, back, way back, the Kabbalists, you know, theologically wondering, like, if the divine is everything, how does the divine create using nothing outside itself? And they said, well, by micro analogy, how do we create using nothing outside ourselves? And they go, oh, in our imagination. And so they said, to made in the image of the divine doesn't mean we look like men with beards. You know, it means, you know, we are dreamed up by the divine in our uniqueness. And the part of us that dreams and imagines is the divine part participating in dreaming the world into being. But my early years, everything important to everything we've ever studied, you know, it said, you know, a clear mental image tends to materialize as an actual condition or event. Wishes are vague, hopes are hazy, genuine desires are clearly defined, you know, and ongoing that they go, an image in our mind is made of molecules as much as this table. Right. And we go, right. And we say some things are always true, but there are times when they're truer. Right. So the metaphors are real. And as we play with them, they actually have molecular reality and are eager to incarnate. So we have a cauldron. It's a dissolving cauldron. And do we have a dissolving grievance clip? We do. Okay, here we go. Maybe not. There we go.
No, it won't let me play the file.
Oh, I can try to play it on my end.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, one moment. We'll try one more time. Third time's the charm.
We can dissolve grievance on our own.
I don't have grievance. And then it's like, whoo, that person did that mean thing several years ago, and I'll never listen to that radio station. Whatever the thing is, whoo. And it's one of those things where I was driving down the road and then just going, the fate of the world requires humans dissolving grievance out of their hearts. So we're going to do that now. Why not? Dream big, play fair. You know, the power of this gathering to start things that, you know, that everybody can take home and, you know, practice this at home, right? But it's in keeping with Neptune. It's, you know, solve a coagula, dissolve and reimagine. Dissolution is the secret of the great work. So with this, just feel in one's heart where we are willing to just dissolve all of that. Dissolving all little minding of who did what, you know, all of that. Dissolving, letting it go.
Yes. I think once a day, right? But because we can also think of, you know, as we scan our personal lives and collective lives, going, well, there's a lot of grievance out there, you know, wafting that, you know, it's it's crazy psychotic. You know, we go, you know, white psychosis is trending, volatility. And so we are again here to be agents of cool out. And so dissolving our complicity with grievance, it's an ongoing practice, right? But that music was wonderful. We can, you can, everybody can find their own whoo. And what's clear in our chart is dissolving grievance opens our channels of hearing. We can hear not just our own inner grievance monologue, but the birds, the thing, the other messages come in, all those things, you know. And I do love to mention again, you know, that having a year ago, you know, gotten hearing aids, I call them wolf hearing, but I so loved that the audiologist, because I said, I still say, what? And she goes, right, you know, you want to read aloud to yourself a little every day, because you're training, you're retraining your brain to hear what it had decided it could not. And I go, oh, that's fascinating. He said, because she said, you can actually hear it, but your brain had decided you couldn't hear those things. And this is very with our moon in Gemini. It's the Mary Poppins with the twins entrusted to her who understand the language of the wind and the birds and the everything. And she says, you're going to forget, you know, and they're like, no, no. And then they forget, right? And then we're remembering, we are remembering. That's what all these retrogrades are. It's like, go back. There's something, you know, behind you that you need to remember, you know, in your own, in our own personal lives, but also in collective cultural life, you know. So I just found that completely interesting. We're liberating our neurological pathways, our brains, because our brains had been conditioned and decided what it could hear and not hear. And we can take that with every perception, right? Taste, you know. For many, many decades, America has been called a realm of gustatory morons, right? Just salty and sweet, salty and infantile children, you know, whereas sour and bitter and nuance, again, more flavors, more complex thinking, more colors, more complex thinking. As things get fast fooded into whatever, people get stupider. But then we are retraining our personal brains and our collective brains to hear, taste, see, think things that it had decided, oh, we can't do that. Possibilities, right? You know, and we are rousing encouragers, you know. So I love that part. So dissolving grievance. And then, of course, what we're ladling out is kindness is so powerful. So I had this very quirky day, very, you know, high contrast, all kinds of complex things, and, you know, went to get an infusion at this sort of groovy corporate thing, but they, you know, fill you up with glutathione and vitamin C, and it's like, good. But you don't eat before then, because they do blood work. So I emerged from that, and it's like, oh, and I smelled like almost good coffee from the little, you know, cafe in the medical huge building, and it's like, oh, that smells good. They grind their own coffee. What a miracle. I haven't had any coffee or anything this morning, right? And I go in, the woman says, that'll be $250, and I go, oh, I have a credit card. And she goes, oh no, cash is better. And I go, I think I have that. This just wonderful stranger, this medical black woman, comes up and goes, I'll buy your coffee. And I go, oh, no, no, really, I have it. I said, and she goes, no, you've done so much good in the world. I'll buy your coffee. I'm like, that is adorable. That is just adorable. I'm going to keep that in my magic backpack as well. And it's because it really felt like, oh, she knows me. Right. But it's like, what a great line. The next time I buy somebody's whatever it is they need, I go, no, you've done so much great good in the world. You know, let me do this. It's fun. Anyway, it was the small, huge grace. The antidote to grievance is that little kindness. It's sustain. I keep it forever. You know, it's like somebody's banner on Twitter that says, "Oh, it's one of the Capitol Hill police guys that I follow." But he goes, "Some stranger remembers you because you were kind to them." It's like, right. Now we're into the Bedouin culture, you know, hello, change your direction and come this way. Here we will, you know, so many other cultures are so much more intrinsically generous. I myself feel churlish, you know, when you go in the Middle East or to almost any culture but America, you know, here we have nothing, but here's tea and here's this and here's that, you know. And part of me is like, oh, I don't really. I mean, I want to be like that. We want to, you know, fill our aspirations about how we want to be. That this is, you know, the Saturn, our dedication to being agents of blessing and kindness across borders, you know, and that medical black woman, wonderful person, you know, who just said that sweet, sweet thing, so unexpected. I'm going to keep that. And as part of an expanding repertoire, what a great thing to say. You know, it's like, oh, so that's so good. But also, you know, for all of us, it had such molecular blessing. Blessings are molecular because she was really into it, right? She was really embodied. That's the Jupiter thing. So what qualities do we dedicate to that we really want to embody? That's going there. And so kindness. And, you know, in even just today, and again, see if it resonates, you know, but there was such contrast going, oh, human befoiblement, oh, and then that little beautiful kindness, and then clouds, beauty. Like, you know, I had complex scheduled things, but I managed to grab an outdoor swim, you know, between them all. And it's like, oh, so beautiful. I mean, just the clouds and the sky and the thing, nature, good, humans, cuckoo, but also little bits good. And so here to teach us further about that is Coco the gorilla. And here to teach us more about that is Coco the gorilla. We'll just wait here for a while. Okay. Coco's wending her way, his way. Well, is that right, Backstage Badger?
Richard also just had some wild computer things, so maybe I will try to find Coco.
Okay.
Oh, good. Oh, perfect.
Oh, there we go. Okay. It's pretty great. Thank you, Coco. And I think that's for real. Anybody who knows sign language, but it feels right. You know, and so we want kindness and boundaries. Kindness and boundaries. You know, talking with Aaron and many people about issues of, you know, cuckoo people in the environment. Again, metaphors that are real. Another thing, again, you know, I want to keep Coco as the great mentor there, and then just backtrack a smidge. Things I also keep with me forever is that years ago I went to a psychic masseuse, but pretty good. She said, wait, I'm going to reach for my prop here. Right, metaphors. Oops, uh-oh. This psychic masseuse said, this is years ago, we keep these things in our cave overhung with twisted roots, and she said, oh, there's all these cords, there's all these cords coming into your solar plexus from people who are whatever, sucking chi, you know. And she said, we're going to cut those cords. I don't know if she had a knife, but I have a knife. Again, literalized metaphor. All ritual is literalized metaphor. And she said, we're going to cut those cords, you know, above, you know, just, and feel free to mentally participate, or above and to the left and to the right and back of you. And in case any of them are sneaky, underneath your feet, underneath each foot, cut that cord. And back in case anything's hiding there. And then she said, this was the crucial part. And we're going to see those people connected to their own wise autonomy. Right? The Saturn boundary and the blessing. And it's so good. So it wasn't like, ooh, yucky vampires, right? Because remember, vampires feed on that. Feed on, go away. No, we love being. You know, it's like, no. And the blessing is, you know, for a blessing is anything that we would welcome ourselves. And we do, you know, that is kind of how it works. We see those people connected to their own wise autonomy. We see ourselves. And in these crazy family chats and then the online fury about everything, we go, right, we cut the sucky thing and see those beings, people, connected to their own wise autonomy. That's so excellent. And that's right, because we can all, you know, again, when we're in kerfuffles, you know, and when there's, you know, energy vampires, they can come through the phone, right? You can feel tentacles coming through the phone, right? So it's like, yeah, because the family drama over here, which is not directly concerning me, except that I, you know, care for the well-being of, well, all these cuckoo people. But so it's like, you know, so I remember also we gather these things when I had a particularly kind of cheese sucking stalker boyfriend, right? And when you call it, it's like tentacles coming through the thing. This was a while ago. But my friend Sylvia said, remember to put on your doctor's mirror on your head, right? And just tell this person, our work is complete now. We have done all we were meant to do, and our work is complete now. There we go. Nim, 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 nim. Our work is complete now. Doctor's mirror, doctor's mirror. Very useful. Again, playing with metaphors, and it worked. Like, oh, our work is complete now. Again, the mirror on your forehead, back at the thing. You know, psychic self-defense was a big kind of 19th century, mid-20th century thing, but it did, when you read the books on psychic self-defense, it's like reading a description of diseases. It's like, yes, I have that, and they're attacking me that way. It can go a little over the top. But also, where's the blessing, and where's the complicity? We're adding things to our mentors, bless their little cuckoo, psychic self-defense, you know, bad forces are out to get me, which is a true story, you know, that can be, but we don't have time for that anymore. And it's part of my again, for everybody has a different thing, distinction between trickster and, say, shaman, of value. But, you know, overused word. I like somebody says, you know, every development has a shaman's way, and law firms are shaman. It's a Siberian word that's gone brand, you know, anyway. So, but for me, the shaman shadow is the addiction to having an enemy. I mean, I know some really good shamans, but even them are like, those forces are out to get me, you know. And it's like, oh, let's just dissolve that. Dissolving the addiction to having an enemy. Oh, let's do that. That's a big one. You know, again, in family micro and larger macro, people come in and it's like, no, you're imprecise flailing. You know, it's like in the Enneagram. I'm reminding myself of things, in the Enneagram, which also started off primarily pathologically and then slowly developed a kind of blessing conscious late in how it was taught. It's an interesting true system, not as beautiful and complex as astrology, but the way I was taught it a million years ago, goes like this, that the doing group, which is all charismatic therapists and whatnot, we got classified in different groups, but they don't know what's going on. So the strategy to compensate is to control everything, right? So it's like, if you don't know what's going on, the only way you'll know what's going on is if you're running it, right? And, you know, I like somebody commenting about somebody else going, he's a great guy. He came into the room and didn't need all the attention, right? Sucking chi, right? And so again, our boundaries and our blessing, you know, hungry ghosts, big theme. Again, our boundaries, and it's like, may you be nourished by what you really crave. And now, goodbye. Whatever the thing is. And then I did just want to briefly bring up, you know, something that I've played with for years and people devote their whole lives to it. And we're going to give it like 3 minutes right now, just because as a metaphor, it's so useful. And it's in my ancient book, which is a good book. It's Gurdjieffian levels of consciousness. And it's very witty. So the brief rundown, -6,000, superstitious, fear, dread. -3,000, societal group conformity. -1,500, king ego. I've been to Esalen, I'm unique, blah, blah. -768, theoretical mastery. Well, pretty high level. I figured it out. I have a system that organizes everything. -384. Depression, -192, suicidal panic, -96, remorse and grief, 0. And then the higher levels. And so Gurdjieff's joke, what the numbers refer to is the number of laws we are subject to when vibrating at that level. It's an interesting thought. You know, so it's like when we conform, when we turn on, I mean, none of this is absolute, you know, when we turn on TV or there's people, I mean, the model was we all go up and down all day, but we have a set point. And part of the difficulty about relationships is somebody's set point. And so to be with them, you have to go down to let's conform and eat, you know, Big Macs. But what's witty about it is the more psychotic one is getting, you're rising up the levels, but you can't live there, you know, but it has occasioned many jokes because -384 is less constricted than thinking you're a big shot, right? Depression is freer, but it doesn't feel good, right? It's just somebody's system. And we don't want to believe in it because then we'd be at the bottom of it, right? If we believed in it, we'd be at -6,000. You know, just, so it's witty that way, but depression, suicidal panic, you can't live there long, right? And so to myself and to others, people go, oh, I'm so depressed. And that's fantastic. Suicidal panic and remorse and you're home clear. Because the model is the negative number states are the number of laws we're subject to when vibrating at that level. And then we get, it's very interesting that remorse and grief are the highest of the constrained levels. Like, oh, because what they're really about is, you know, I was churlish when that opportunity for kindness was presented. And I was like, no, that's one part of remorse. Like, oh, I could have been kind. I could have been a liberating kind thing. And that's a useful thing. You know, Doris Lessing in her book, Shikasta, has the whole white race put on trial, not for punishment, but for ritual. I go, that's a good idea too. Remorse and grief. And then 0, right? So the number of laws we're subject to, but as we rise up that, then we become agents of principles, living agents of principles rather than subject to constraining forces. I think it's a really useful metaphor. And that's part of what we're engaged in here, which is, and see anything we practice, astrology can be practiced at any of those level, superstitious, dread, conformity, theoretical, I'm a big shot genius, you know, and see what comes after I'm a big shot theoretical genius is depression. Like, oh, I was a fraud. I was so limited, you know, and then -192, I think I'll kill myself. No, wait, grief. No, now the party begins. There's a lot of ways to play with this. And the idea that there's food at these that support these levels, you know, and I have old jokes, you know, it's like when I was really, you know, at kind of with our nation's foreign policy, all it took was a Big Mac, and I was completely fine with American foreign policy for as long as it took to digest. It's like, oh, I'm American now. So there's food, there's conversations, there's people that can be superstitious, fear-based, conformity. I'm important. I'm better than anybody. I've figured it out. I figured it out. Oh, I was a jerk. Oh, now I'm really depressed. Now I'm about to kill myself. Now I'm an agent of magicians, right? It's fun to play with, right? Just as a useful model. But like everything that Gurdjieff, interesting teacher, he meant all of his teachings to be experimental and temporal. And there was all these like little enshrined schools and with useful but also dangerous metaphors. You know, we are awake, everybody else is asleep. It's like, now we throw that into the cauldron too. Because I think we're doing a lot of historic, cultural, our own ancestors, you know, where were they conditioned, superstitious, superior. We're doing it on behalf of, you know, all those little parts, you know, and dissolving that, you know, well, and Coco's really got it right. So I know it's a little abrupt, but would anybody like to say anything or contribute, or is this useful, or, you know, it's useful. All right, there we go. Then the slow nodding. That's fine. You know, do people have the opportunity? Very nice, emphatic nodding. Thank you, Linda. That's so heartening. So it's like, yes, just to feel kind of, oh, there we go. Everybody's looking a little alive. Neil's smiling a little bit. Okay, that's good. Right. Lucy's eating macaroni. Can't tell. That's good. There's Milda. Wonderful. Yeah, and then backstage team, you know, people can unmute themselves if they want to speak in an uninhibited fashion, right?
I believe so.
Okay, so anybody can. So the levels of consciousness, though, I think it's really useful. And again, I'll just repeat because it's useful to myself, that astrology and mythology and everything, right, can be practiced on all those levels. Superstition or conformity are the outsourcing of, you know, our autonomy, you know, and that's why we don't want to create priesthoods, right? You know, again, priesthoods for me into the cauldron, the intermediary, you know, an outsourcing of authority, guides and mentors. Yeah. And, you know, whenever I want to get into trouble in California, which is, you know, sometimes because I'm like that, you know, I might start a talk by saying, anybody here not a shaman or a life coach, it will save time. Right. Anyway, so there are people. But just, you know, again, I think teasing and play, it's the, you know, shamans not necessarily teasable. And again, everybody create their own criterion. For me, teasing in a kind way, see, that's the really important thing. Teasing in a kind way as a fundamental public service, right, is a good trickster thing. And it's really intrinsically democratic. And I've been surprised and fooled by myself, in which I would presume like, oh, these people do this great hip music, you know, and yes, they want me to go on tour with them, and they love what I do. That's really great. And then at a certain point I go, oh, but they're not tricksters. How did I miss that? I just sort of presume everyone is, right? They don't want to play equal. They might want to be important. A terrible fate when people become important. You know, it's a portable prison, really. And we go, oh, they wanted to be important, or they wanted to be an important shaman, you know, or they wanted to be it's like, oh, I missed it, or a grand dame. And all those beings have purpose, right? But for me, I go, oh, but where's the trickster, the part of us that we're speaking to in all of us that is about equal play and a little teasing and maybe crossing the border, because sometimes you got to cross the line to know where it is and go, oop, ah, oop, ah. But really, you know, nothing more fun than being a little edgily truthful with a kind heart, see, that's the crucial thing. And the other person, against all odds, takes it and plays with it. And it's like, oh, it's just so the best. I treasure those moments where there was a conflict, you know, and then blah, 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 and the person goes, oh, you don't, right? You know, there's a few, and we're adding more, but it's also like when I was at a conference in Rhode Island, poetry conference with Mary Oliver and other really cool people, and I gave a talk, and I think I quoted Joseph Campbell, one of his last living lines. He said, The situation of strife and contention in the Middle East is evidence of the mythological bankruptcy of the three Abrahamic religions. And then it's a good line to say when you're about to die. Gotta go now. All right. But I think I brought that up. And afterwards, a rabbi came up to me and said, I've never been so insulted in all my life. And I go, the evening is young. Wait for it. Some other thing where I, you know, whatever, and a woman came up and was like, ah, da ba da ba da ba da ba da ba da ba, and metaphors, to have our metaphors. And I go, okay, let's imagine there's a cauldron in front of us, and let's hold hands and together jump in and say, if there's anything in either one of us that is not dedicated to greater good, may it be bubbled away. And she was like, are you serious? I'm like, no, I'm playful. And she was like, okay. And we did. And it was one of those things that, you know, the other person's like way into it more than me. Like I sort of, you know, we closed our eyes and then I opened my eyes. She's still into it. Right. And then she comes up and goes, that was fantastic. And I go, that was great. Thank you. Thank you for this great dance. I mean, the conflict into resolution is like one of the most fun things. Right. It does. I mean, it doesn't always work that way, but it's experiment is part of our dynamic, you know, and, you know, part of the beautiful grand trine. The deeper the intensity, the more the playful deal wants to happen. And I'll just say this rather than bring up the chart, too. But it's like, all right, so Thor's hammer. Maybe I'll bring up the chart briefly, because I just want to show one other cool thing that is available to us already. Grand trine in earth, but the grand trine in earth, that's pretty cool. Thor's hammer, moon to Pluto, moon to Mars, squared these guys. The moon has a quintile to Venus in Leo, right? Oops, and they just changed. How exciting. The rising sign, just it's the ongoing mythic news, right? Is 23 Gemini, which is three fledglings and a nest. So it goes, everybody gets three projects. Okay, thank you. So Uranus and Jupiter square Venus and Leo, 90 degree angle. A square is an assignment to get illusorily estranged principles to dance together in us and in the world. Earth, magic, animism, theater. Earth, magic, animism, theater. Theater for the earth, back together, right? And then moving down here, the moon, part of Thor's hammer, but quintiles Venus and Leo, all the creativity that ever was or will be is here now, eager for fresh expression, to bring old things alive in a fresh new way. And that's also part of where we all get to wonder, like, what are we courting and what is courting us? What like an animal? See, moon in Gemini with all this company says anything for which we have a name or a word, we have a relationship, right? So that's why we want to keep broadening our vocabulary and our curiosity. The more relationships, the more forms of cahooting, the more accomplices. And the quintile, irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love, if we're listening, you know, and again, the capacity to open portals between worlds. So with voice, with words, with creativity, kind of reaching into our own personal past and cultural past and go, what do we need now to bring alive now? We wonder, Neptune says, we just want you to wonder. We just want you to wonder. And just to repeat this fabulous proffering kindness on behalf of the backstage gods, wonder and Uranus, wonder and augury revelation. I wonder what to do. Well, okay. Right. It's why we throw the I Ching or we look out the window or we whatever. It's all speaking to us like, I wonder. And see, wonder is intrinsically kind of humble. And our word humble comes from humus, dirt, from which we get the word human. Right. We humans, etymologically, are meant to be humble in the dirt. We go, yeah, what a good idea. You know, so wonder attracts, you know, wonder is humble because it's like backstage goes, look at all those humans who've run out of certainty. A round of ancestral applause. That's fantastic because some of them used to have a lot of opinions. There we go. And now they know nothing, right? I mean, they know everything and nothing, everything and nothing. And now available to mystery. We go, we are available to mystery. So we have one last party trick, party favor to practice at home. All right. I think that's it for the moment. Quintiles. Yes. Dark spiciness, dark spiciness. I was particularly fond of something I ran across in Facebook. Because our blessings, see, they can be Pluto-ish, you know. We're not being nice, you know. As Granny Weatherwax says, we're witches and wizards. We don't do nice. The word nice comes from nescient, which means ignorant. But we want to be fierce but kind. Anyway, the thing I loved, it said, this is one of those block things, and it says, I have no control over how my ancestors protect me, so mind your manners. I think that's very fun. I think that's very fun. You know, and you can keep that in your bag too. You know, oh, good sir, I have no control over how my ancestors protect me. So watch yourself. Anyway, so and see, that's the thing about Groucho Marx and Groucho Marxist and collecting these things is, you know, we want to liberate the situation. But at the very least, us being jaunty in a tyrannical situation is pretty good. It's why I do love, you know, Groucho Marx. You know, I've had a wonderful evening. This wasn't it, but I've had a wonderful evening. I've used that, you know, a couple times, and a couple times I forgot to. Oh, it's like, oh God, that would have been the perfect thing to say, you know. But the one time I used it really truly, because it was a ghastly evening, just had a wonderful evening. This wasn't it. And it's like, I left jolly. Everybody else looks surprised. And it's like, I'm going to go hang out with the dogs. There we go. Dogs, dogs, dogs are really good. That's wonderful. So there's that. So all right, there's those things. All right, we've got cords. We've got a Thor's hammer. We've got, you know, we're cutting cords and seeing people connected to their own wise autonomy. We're seeing hungry ghosts fed. All of these things, you know, to prime everybody's pump to play. You know, we do have liberating lightning. There we go. That's our last tonight metaphor. So we have let me bow out of here. All right, goodbye, chart. Thank you very much. So we do have liberating lightning, and from the equinox event, just because it's got such great sound effects. And I pulled out somebody gave me, you know, Oya, Uranus. See, all the gods and myths were stuck with the Greek names, but they're all ambisexual. So Uranus also is Oya, hurls her horsetail whip and summons the winds of change. We go, that's great. So we'll get to that. But right now, remember, each one of us underneath the chair has a bag of metaphoric, but for real, liberating lightning. Liberating lightning. And here we go, our little clip on liberating lightning with really good sound effects. So just participate with co-imagining. Here we go. You got to wait for okay.
Bag of liberating lightning.
To hurl at any closed circle to liberate it into a spiral, right? So it's from Stella Coyote, who set the whole shebang going with liberating lightning. Okay, so everybody, you can practice. You can practice. Try this at home. Try this at home. Take this home and practice it.
That's good and excellent. That is just the image I had in mind backstage, Badger, when you were like, oh, the recording doesn't have an image. I go, I think there's lightning striking the Capitol. And you found it. You found it. That is the very thing. That's pretty fun. Put that on your altar. So we got Thor's hammer and liberating lightning on the Capitol. I think these are effective forms of participation. But see, Jornas, trickster, yeah, believe nothing, entertain possibility, says, don't believe any of this, you know, but practice, you know, and Jornas, you know, trickster is nature's evolutionary trickster genius that has no category about success, fail. Just throw that into the cauldron. Other parts of us do, but it's like, try that, you know, try that. Nope. Try that. Nope. Try that. Nope. Try that. Ooh, I feel a sizzle of connection. So it's try stuff. And it also is the antidote to any Neptunian whaley, like, I tried that and it didn't work. We'll try something else. Come on, team. It's why Terry Pratchett has the wee free men who go, oh, whaley, oh, whaley, you know, when they're daunted by, you know, police or lawyers or whatever. But it's wonderful. It's making light of darkness. Oh, whaley. And it works really great with animals. You know, when I lived with Stella Coyote, who would get sometimes fierce, like, ah, nah, nah, nah. And I'd go, oh, whaley. It would just crack her up. The coyotes would laugh. She'd be like, oh, I'm very serious. I'm fierce. Oh, whaley. Oh, whaley. Oh. I think it's whaley is also useful in the backpack. But that's also what it occurred to me in talking to the Equinox team in Viroqua, Wisconsin. Adorable. We had a Equinox council the next morning, I think. And I can't remember. But I realized also, like, liberating lightning, we can hurl it at ourselves. I think that's really fun, right? So whenever we have like some closed loop that, you know, even we are bored with, it's like, oh God, this part of me again. Ah, now it's liberated. You know, run free, little creatures. Right. So liberating lightning, fujibida, and for ourselves, going, ah, oh, God, this is boring. Is also good. So, all right, before we have our finale fun thing, Halloween comes early this year. You know, again, anybody want to say anything? I don't know if we, there are, wait, I can't tell. Oh, head? Oh, a person?
Yes.
Yes.
I just wanted to speak about liberating Thor, because here we have liberating lightning and we have Thor's hammer. And I think about how Rune Rasmussen talks about how most of our modern ideas of Thor come from Iceland, where nobody knew thunder or lightning. Mm. And there's an older Thor who existed in the realm of thunder and lightning. And he was known mostly as the son of Earth and the protector of Earth. And we think about all the great electric shield we have all about the Earth, and how it's the shield that the aurora are reflected upon and dance upon, and how we can liberate Thor by allowing him instead, or in addition, to again become the strong and gentle protector who also delights in the dance of colors upon his shield.
That's great. I mean, I'm catching up. Didn't get all everybody's, you know, chats here. But you had said earlier, apropos of today's themes, my Thor's hammer pendant is missing somewhere in the yurt, right? And my Mayan name pendant is missing. Maybe they're having an affair.
Yes,
right. They've gone into the missing world somewhere. Oh, there we go. Right, and it is going all right. Maybe they're off doing work. All right. I mean, that's a good story reframe. Because part of me is like, I looked everywhere. I even looked, you know how you look where you know it isn't? It's like, let me just look in the garbage can in case I leaned over and this valuable thing fell in. No, apparently not. Let me just look. It's a mystery. It's a mystery. So you're Thor's hammer's mystery. Right. But that's great. Well, liberating everything. Liberating blasphemy, right? Because for a long time ago, the divine wants to be liberated from past confines of human imagination. It's because so much of what comes down to us is negative 6,000. Super, the gods are having an affair and they're mad at people. It's like, ah, God, liberating, lightening that. It's just tedious, right? And going deeper to what did this want to be before it got cartooned or whatever the thing is. That and then Aaron says maybe like when keys hide themselves, and I think, aha, I must need to be slowed down. Yes, right. That's good. Perhaps Thor's hammer has jumped off to help swoosh corruption out. That's good. It's off with my Mayan name, protector of the earth. That's right. Well, we liberate, liberate the divine from the limitations of human imagination. May it be you. And they're like, thank you, or whatever, or that's right. Many other things. Elia Kazan's 1957, A Face in the Crowd, Lonesome Roads. Genius movie. Made all the more genius because it stars Andy Griffith. And for us old timers, Andy Griffith usually played, country yokel, buffoon, lightweight characters. But he's so good at evil. Like, whoa. And that's the unexpected, what is it called? Countercasting, right? Where you cast somebody sweet as somebody evil or whatever, but it's like, oh, that was brilliant. And just as a little thing from the few things I got from my Brown University education, which was many films, it's tricky because we embrace nuance. Alakazam also made On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando, a very tricky movie, right? Because it's like we remember it. I could have been a contender, powerful thing, but it's about the value of snitching, of ratting on your fellows. And Elia Kazan at that time was testifying before the House Committee on Un-American Affairs, turning in his colleagues, right? So it's like, oh, bad Elia. Face in the crowd, good Elia, right? Good, right? So we're all many things going, oh, very good, very, very good. Yeah, liberate us from tyranny, complicit us in tyranny. And we go, all right. I'm not sure which came first. I think this one is after On the Waterfront, or at least I hope it is. We want liberating coming after tyranny. We got and then Sean says resentment is resentment. Yep. Hello, somebody.
Yes. Hi,
Hi.
Caroline. It's Judy Prescott. I
Yeah.
just had to chime in about Elia Kazan. My teacher for many years as an actor was Morris Karnofsky, and Elia named his name, and said he was a communist and went before the committee and said, because they said, who's a communist? And he said, Morris Karnofsky is, because that's how it went. You had to say someone or else, you were going to be called a communist, whatever. Morris didn't work for years, but then many years later, when he was 50 years old, he hadn't worked for years. And he became one of America's most wonderful Shakespearean actors. So it was like he got through it, but Elia Kazan, man, he was, yeah, Morris was really upset, obviously.
Right. Well,
Jesus
these are
was.
big things. These are big things about no one is one thing. Right.
Yeah.
And again, nuance and nuance. And that's why, again, part of our skill set that we practice, and I'm completely with everybody. We practice these things like, and we aspire, which is we speak to that in someone that we want to invite to dance with the corollary part of ourselves. Which is why if we're judgy, right, we're inviting the least interesting part of somebody to dance with the least interesting part of ourselves. And so how to have insight with play rather than judgment, to be liberating rather than constraining. It takes practice. We're rewiring our neurological, mythological patterns to do things that culture had decided we could not, right? The collective brain had decided we could not. We go, that's really good. Resentment is resentiment, feeling out of its time and place. That's really good. That's really good. Oh, that's great. I'm glad you liked it, Elizabeth. Right. But that's a great thing to say, Judy Prescott. Yeah, complexity and nuance. And that's also what we're kind of up to. And I do practice these things, you know, and encourage us to do that, or each person's own customized version. You know, like sometimes, you know, with radio show, you know, even the night before, I go, oh, I should have read the book before I booked the person, the guest, like, oh no, okay. And then it's like, no, speak to the part of them you want to invite to play. Because, you know, it was a very important left-wing thinker, but the language was all the, you know, the pedagogy of the, I can't even do it. But it was, you know, left-wing academic words, abstract, no Venus to the thing. I was like, oh. But it turned out great. I mean, I spoke to the playful part of them, you know. I'm one of the very few people who could ever make Derek Jensen laugh. Oh God, I don't know if I could do it again. But he was going, you know, death to human, you know, nature good, humans, let's kill all the humans. And I go, what makes you happy, Derek? And he's like, oh, dogs. When I walk with my dad, I was like, let's go there. There we go. Who's a good Derek? Yes, you are. Woozoo, woozoo, woozoo. Yeah, it's like, who's a good person? Yeah. Dogs have a lot to teach us about that. So here we are, team. Our finale, unless anybody has anything else they want to say, but Halloween comes early, and this is just, you know, just as we undulate or turn off the video so nobody can see you, or turn on the video so people can see you. I mean, we're all in this team together here. You know, just that we're inviting to, you know, embody this expanding repertoire of ways to play that are liberating. So here we go. The Witch's finale.
Shut up.
Thank you, team. Yay.
Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks, all.
Thank you.
Yay.